welcome to the Advisor Pact monthly session. I'm Mark Little. We've got some issues to deal with today, questions that were submitted by trusted advisors who are members of the program. Listen, this monthly session is your opportunity to get answers to your questions. And I encourage you to click the Contact Us link on the top of the Advisor Pact website and submit your questions to the Advisor Pact monthly session. If we receive your question at least 24 hours before going live for this session, then we'll consider your question for inclusion in the Advisor Pact monthly session. So the Advisor Pact program is really designed for advisors who have made the decision that you want to deliver truly comprehensive financial services. So not every affluent client or potential client is actually seeking truly comprehensive financial services, but the premise of this program is for those clients who are seeking comprehensive financial services, they claim they can find no advisor anywhere at any price that is willing to deliver on all services related to their personal financial affairs. So members of this program agree to make an advisor pact with each and every ideal client that you accept as a client and that you are going to be delivering truly comprehensive financial services. PACT is an acronym. It's an acronym for four words. These four words are what we call the four client expectations. These are the four things specifically that when we've done work in the past, surveyed clients about what they want most from an advisor, what they expect most from a trusted advisor, and what they claim they cannot find anywhere. It's these four words: protection, as in I don't have anyone to protect my back. So this is an advisor who makes a pledge, a pact, that I will be that individual that will have your back. I pledge to identify every potential conflict of interest, and I will protect you, and I will protect your financial assets from anyone or anything that I can possibly identify which will represent a danger to your strategy and to your assets. A stands for attention. So clients claim that they cannot find advisors who properly pay attention. And when by this pledge, in our context, you are pledging to pay close enough attention that when circumstances in a client's situation's life changes, financial life, that you have a process in place to identify those changes so that you can more or less in real time make recommendations for the required course corrections so that a client can remain on track to the objectives or the goals that they've shared with you. So paying attention. The third commitment is coordination. You pledge and you have an advisor pact with each and every ideal client to coordinate all the financial products and all the financial people in a client's financial life. So clients have financial people in their life before you came along. They have an accountant, typically. They might have an estate planning lawyer, certainly have insurance agents, and they most affluent people have someone managing their money. They've got their money parked somewhere. Your pledge is to coordinate all those financial products and all those financial people. So you're going to create an overarching strategy for each and every client, and you're going to make sure that every recommendation that goes before the client, whether it's from their existing automobile insurance agent or their existing tax accountant, you're creating a team and an oversight process to make sure that every recommendation, no matter who it's from, that is financial recommendation, is well aligned, I would say perfectly aligned, with the client's comprehensive written lifetime financial strategy, which your team will create for each and every client. And then transparency, it's appalling how many clients really don't know what they're paying for their financial products or their financial people in their lives. So you're making a pact, a pledge, to make sure that to make a commitment to each and every client that you will make sure that each client fully understands what they're paying for every financial product and every financial person in their life. So that's the program. Now, I have before we get into the content that we've got lined up for today, I got a piece of advice. Depending upon whether you're new to this program or whether you've been in the program for a while. If you're new to this program, I recommend over the next 30 days that you block time on your calendar to consider this project of how you're going to ramp up your services and begin delivering truly comprehensive financial services. One of the things that I would recommend that you do over the next 30 days, if you're new to the program, is to time block an hour each and every day to go back and look at the archive of these monthly sessions. If you block an hour a day for the next 30 days to go back and look at past sessions of the Advisor Pack monthly session, you'll sit here a month from now with a heck of a lot more context and a lot more ideas of specifically what you can do to deliver on this Advisor Pact, to increase the value that you provide to clients, and to begin ramping up your service, the truly comprehensive financial services that you're pledging to clients. So a new member to the Advisor Pack program often wonders, where do I start? What do I begin to do to deliver truly comprehensive financial services? Well, in addition to the monthly projects that we give to you, I recommend that you invest an hour a day for the next 30 days and go through past episodes of the monthly session, and you'll get all kinds of ideas. You know, as you go through the episodes, keep a pad of paper next to you and make bullet point brainstorming list of action items of things that you can and should be doing on your team to deliver truly comprehensive financial services, or to develop your plan to begin delivering truly comprehensive financial services. Now, if you're an existing member of the Advisor Pack program, what I'm going to challenge you to do is to, when you get off this session, I want you to calculate how much time you and your team invested over the last 30 days with this project. So your project is to deliver truly comprehensive financial services, and if you're not already delivering that level of service, to institute a plan to get there as quickly as possible. So your plan is to deliver truly comprehensive financial services and to get there as quick as you can. And then further, your commitment is to be able to legitimately be able to make these four promises to each client. This Advisor Pact: protection, attention, coordination, and transparency. So my challenge to you is to calculate how much time did you actually spend on that project last month, and then to make your commitment this month to increase that time. Now, you can increase it by 1 minute. You can increase the amount of time that you spent on this project by 1 hour, or you could basically plant your feet firmly in the ground and say, this is the month that we're going to sit down as a team and really brainstorm what needs to happen to move this project forward. So whether it's increasing the amount of time this month over last month by 1 minute, or increasing it by a substantial amount to make this month the month that you actually make a huge giant leap and move forward with this project, either way, make a commitment to invest more time this month than you did last month on this Advisor Pact project. Now, the issue that came in today, the big picture is, it was several questions that came in, and I kind of compiled them into one issue. So we're going to cover several things today, but the big issue that came in from trusted advisors was, the theme was, how do I inspire my subject matter experts to step up their game and provide even more impressive service to clients? So I'm going to tell you that the premise today, and I'll give you the one of the exact questions that we received from a trusted advisor here in a moment, but let me give a little context to this. Truly comprehensive financial services, when you properly execute that, that truly comprehensive financial services will become indispensable to your clients. So the challenge is to properly execute it so that your ideal clients consider what you're doing as being truly indispensable. Indispensable being they would not only never fire you, they worry about what would happen if you weren't in their life. So that's the goal. Your goal is to become indispensable. And if you properly execute what we're teaching, you will become indispensable to each and every one of your ideal clients. Now, once you're indispensable, your clients won't be able to resist referring you. It's just human nature. If they, in their own minds, consider you to be indispensable, then when they're in a situation with someone else, it could be a relative, it could be a neighbor, it could be a coworker, or a social friend. They could be at a dinner, a board meeting, a backyard barbecue, whatever. They could be sitting with someone else who's talking about their money, or they could be talking about any issue. Perhaps the other person is complaining about their financial affairs or complaining about their financial life. If you're indispensable, I want you to just think about the human nature aspect of this. Your client won't be able to resist speaking up about you, either about you or about the experience that they have with you. So if you properly execute everything that we're teaching and you become indispensable in the client's minds, then the ultimate measure of your team's effectiveness is going to be an increase in referrals. It will be measurable. You'll be able to see, as your clients consider you more and more indispensable, your rate of referrals will pick up, because your clients can't resist mentioning you to everyone that they know when the subject of money comes up. So what the question is, what does it take to become indispensable? So the questions that came in this month had to do more with, you know, the technical side, like, what do I actually do? You know, Mark, is there an actual process to get my subject matter experts to step up their game and to provide more impressive service? So I think at the essence of this is, the question is actually, what will it take to become indispensable to clients? And I'm telling you that there are actually two things that will ultimately determine whether you become indispensable or not. And I think if I say it a different way, when you're indispensable, let's picture that time in the future when you are indispensable to all of your ideal clients. I think you'll look back in time and you'll agree that there were two things that drove that result. Number one is on your shoulders as trusted advisor. You're the one meeting with clients. You're the one, you know, that meets with clients three times a year. We have the three meeting process, where you have a meeting at least once every 4 months with each client. Each meeting has a meeting type. There's an agenda for each meeting. So it really rests on you and your ability to actually deliver in those meetings an extraordinary client meeting experience. Now, that means that you're going to have to do something that literally no other advisors do. I think of a survey that I saw maybe 10 years ago of whether advisors actually practice for their client meetings. It was an infinitesimal percentage. It was less than 1% who actually practice or rehearse or script out or what I would call practice to deliver an extraordinary client meeting experience. So that's basically on you. But the second thing is the quality and quantity of your subject matter experts' work. And that's what we're going to focus on today. Today, we're going to focus on what processes and what strategies can you put into place to inspire your subject matter experts to deliver their best work for each and every one of your ideal clients. Not just go through the motions, because if you build a team and your team is just, you know, you know, not nominally successful. In other words, they basically are certified to do what they do, but nothing more, not particularly skilled. And if you build a team like that and they just simply go through the motions, then your subject matter experts are not going to help you drive this standard of clients viewing you as indispensable. So if you're going to become indispensable, in part, it's going to be your subject matter experts must be truly extraordinary. And that's what we're going to talk to about today. Now, I chose one of the actual questions that came in so you could get a gist of the tenor of the questions that I received around this month. This question from a trusted advisor in the program. I have acquired 5 subject matter experts onto my team, as you recommend. I have all 5 areas now covered by an estate by an expert, that being a financial planning expert, a tax expert, a money management expert, an estate planning subject matter expert, and an insurance subject matter expert. So those are the 5 major areas of finance, and you're correct. If you've been in the program for a while, you recognize that as being what we recommend, that you build a team of, you know, I'm going to say local professionals, although some could be virtual. But the point is that you've gone out and you have found people who are experts in these narrow fields of finance, and you've acquired and gotten them to agree, these 5 professionals, to serve on your team. So this advisor has done that. The problem is my clients are not impressed yet. My team does not seem to be functioning as a team. Now, I know my subject matter experts are highly skilled and capable, but how do I inspire my subject matter experts to step up their game and provide more impressive service? Okay, so this, I just, at the risk of having those of you who look at this who are actually in the process of trying to acquire your subject matter experts being frustrated at looking at this, thinking, wow, here's an advisor who's actually got the whole team in place and the clients aren't impressed. Okay, so let me pause just long enough to say that while you're building your team, in part, a way to be addressing this issue or to avoid this issue in advance is to be very, very careful on your selection of subject matter experts before you invite them on the team. So I'm going to give you some strategies today to answer the question, how do you inspire your subject matter experts to step up their game and provide more impressive service? However, my advice to those of you that are actually in the process of still going out and recruiting and building your team, take notes on this, because what really will help you is to set these expectations up front. In other words, as you're interviewing subject matter expert candidates before you invite them onto your team, if you'll take the notes from this session and kind of embed them into your conversation, so that what you're doing as you're interviewing and and assessing subject matter expert candidates before you make a final selection on which candidate you want to invite onto your team, if you'll set what these discussion points we are going to put together today as your expectations that you convey very clearly and concisely with each of your candidates, then you'll increase the probability that rather than having to go back later and figure out how do I inspire these people to step up their game, you'll be setting that expectation up front so that you're creating a higher probability that your subject matter experts actually come out of the chute on day one already inspired with a stepped up game, and they're already have their expectations set that they need to be providing very impressive service. Okay, I'm going to say that if the goal is to get your subject matter experts to, what's it going to take is the question. What's it going to take to inspire my subject matter experts to step up their game and provide more impressive service? Well, one of the questions is, what does that mean? What does more impressive service mean? You can talk about it. You can actually even set the expectation with your subject matter experts. But ultimately, at the end of the day, I hate to use that cliche. People use it all the time. I even catch it when I hear other people say it. But it is true. At the end of the day, there are dual strategies for determining what impressive service actually means. And I'm going to refer you back to a previous episode of the Advisor Pack monthly session, because the first of the dual strategies is to go and ask your clients, to actually begin a conversation with each and every one of your clients, your ideal clients, to get their views of what it would take for them to increase their referral rate to you. Okay, so we've talked about the advisor value score. This is a project that we give to you at some point in the program, and you have a chance to implement it. We've also covered this in some detail in past episodes of the Advisor Pack Monthly session. So if you look at the notes from the replay page of this video, once it goes live, I will make sure that there is a reference to which episode, you know, where to go find that episode that talks about what we call the Advisor Value Score. Now, the Advisor Value Score is just a very simple little survey that we recommend that you do implement with your ideal clients. And it gets at the heart of two specific things. One is it asks your ideal client point blank, do you consider us indispensable? It's kind of a yes or no question. And the standard is you've got to keep your team focused on increasing what they're doing in terms of value to clients until you reach until your indispensability score exceeds 95%. In other words, the goal is 100% of your ideal clients to consider you indispensable. But you don't allow your team to rest or slow down even in their search for how to improve client value until you've received an indispensability score of 95%. In other words, 95% of your ideal clients consider you indispensable. Okay, so you'll get a measure of that. The second thing that the advisor value score measures is it will ask what is it that it would take for this client to refer you and your services to a friend of theirs. So the result of the advisor value score is that over time, not every time you give it, obviously, but if you give the advisor value score at every client progress meeting, and that's what we recommend, that you institute this survey at the end of every single client progress meeting. So that means at least three times a year, you're asking each client to fill out this survey that takes less than 5 minutes to fill out. In part, the advisor value score offers an opportunity for clients to give a specific example of something that they would love to see you doing more of for them. And so the advisor value score will give you actionable, implementable information direct from clients' mouths as to specifically what it would take to increase, it's this issue that you're trying to get at today. What is impressive service in the minds of clients? So the dual strategy is, number one, ask your clients. And the second strategy is leadership. It really falls on you to provide leadership for your team. Now, what we're going to focus on today is the leadership, and we're going to talk about how to increase the level of service by documenting high standards. Okay, so this is one thing that when we have gone in past years and we've assessed this situation, let's say we have a business where a trusted advisor has built their team, and now we're trying to increase the referral rates from the client. So this is something that most advisors have never done in the past, using referrals as the ultimate measure, under the theory that if clients are really impressed with this team, they can't resist mentioning the services to other people that they know. And there is a notice, in our experience, there is a noticeable increase in the rates of referrals over time as your team implements higher standards. So the question becomes, what are these higher standards? How do I implement them? What do they represent? I'm going to start with the concept that most advisors don't do, and that is to say they need to be documented. So you may be sitting here thinking, well, I do have high standards, and I wouldn't doubt you one bit. I believe you. What most advisors do not do, however, is take that thought to the next logical level, which is to actually write them down. What are these high standards? And you cannot hold others on the team accountable to your high standards reasonably unless you document them and basically create the standard by saying, here's a list of the high standards. Now, let me just pause for a moment and say that when you're acquiring subject matter experts, so I'm thinking about this advisor that submitted the question, you've got this team of five subject matter experts, and they're not functioning as a team, at least to your way of thinking. Most of these highly skilled subject matter experts are not accustomed to serving on a team. So when you came across these highly skilled subject matter experts, you know, typically they were, you know, operating in their profession at a very high level, but they were somewhat of a gunslinger. So it may be a partner in a tax firm that you've now recruited to be a subject matter expert on your team as well. It could be a partner in a local law firm who is an estate planning subject matter expert who's now agreed to serve on your team. But before you came along, they were just a great estate planning attorney. All they had to do was please their clients, you know, go out and find clients and please them. And so they were kind of an independent operator. They were very good at what they do, but they didn't have to really operate or think of the team. Same goes for insurance. Same goes for all the other subject matter experts, money management, financial planning. So all these people typically are very good at what they do, obviously, or you would not have invited them onto your team, but they just aren't used to serving on a team. And now what that means, in part, is they're not used to other people looking over their shoulder. So part of the responsibility of serving on a team is making sure that when you make recommendations for a client as a team member, or if you're working through an analysis on a client and you're thinking about kind of an issue related to a client, what you're used to doing, if you're an independent operator, independent professional, is just doing the work. And then you've got to satisfy yourself about the high standards of the work. And then you have to make a decision and then ultimately make a recommendation to the client. But the point is, nobody else needs to see that work behind the scenes. Now that you're on a team, all that changes. Each subject matter expert now has to document their work in such a way that others can come in behind them and not only see the recommendation that comes from each subject matter expert, but see all the thought process that went into coming up with that recommendation. So if there's an analysis or a thought process or, you know, some source documents that kind of led to the recommendation or the lack of a recommendation, you know, if there's a decision to be made, yes or no, you know, what do we do? There's something that goes on behind the scenes in the mind of each subject matter expert that drives that final decision, that final recommendation that's made. And that's what subject matter experts are not accustomed to documenting or showing to other people. But now that you're on a team, all that work needs to be available to everyone on the team, because there may be crossover, well, for two reasons. Number one is there may be crossover issues. So who's to say if an estate planning attorney or a money management, an estate planning subject matter expert or a money management subject matter expert, who's to say that if you're working on an issue for a client and you kind of go through your process and you think about the client's situation and you're looking at all their documents and everything, and then you ultimately come up with a recommendation, who's to say there might not be a crossover issue with another subject matter expert, say a tax subject matter expert or an insurance subject matter expert? I mean, it's very common for an estate planning attorney to come up with a recommendation that ultimately the insurance subject matter expert will have an opinion about. Like maybe there is some insurance impact either on existing insurance or, you know, the need for additional insurance or whatever the case, or at least to analyze whether additional insurance is needed. So it all would be driven by the estate planning subject matter expert documenting their thought process, either creating a memorandum as here's the background of how I came to my conclusion, or let's say it's a tax subject matter expert who's going through a bunch of tax issues. So there's a bunch of schedules or spreadsheets or analysis of what this sort or another, and then a memorandum saying, you know, here was the background of what I was thinking, and then ultimately I decided with these variables, I decided to make this recommendation so that the others on the team can see it. You know, perhaps the money management subject matter expert reads that analysis and says, well, that has a definite implication on the way that I manage money. You know, maybe Maybe there's a decision to you know, that has to do with investments that are held that have embedded capital gains or losses. So my point is that most subject matter experts are not accustomed to serving on a team, but now that they're on a team, they have to be able to share their work and their backup to their work and their source documents and everything with everyone on the team. So it's your job, as it's your leadership job, it's up to your leadership to mold each one of these subject matter experts into an effective team player, because that's not their natural instinct. That's not what they've been doing all these years. They've just simply not been used to functioning this way. So it's going to fall to you and your leadership to actually take this skilled subject matter expert, this independent operator, and transform them into an effective team player. And in part, I'm going to say, for the purposes of this session, that documenting high standards and then creating consistent routines around those standards will increase client value dramatically. Okay, so let's talk about documenting high standards. What would these high standards be? I'm going to give you some examples of high standards that I feel that you should set and that you should actually document. So the first has to do with responsiveness. And now this is after, you know, we've been doing this since 2002. I mean, I've been in the business for 30 years, but I've been teaching this to other advisors since 2002. After we built this system, we immediately began sharing it with other advisors. And so what I'm about to share with you in terms of high standards are things that we've encountered that, if not addressed, could become a big problem. Now, this issue of responsiveness is a very common problem. We hear complaints from administrative managers. We hear complaints from subject matter experts that there are members of the team that don't return phone calls, that, you know, I send them an email and I never hear back, or I, you know, it takes a week to hear back from them. So responsiveness can be a serious problem. I would say it is the number one measure of a team member's measurement of them being a team player, is their responsiveness. It's the number one thing that, and easiest thing that you can measure to determine whether or not an individual is a good team player or not. So I'm just going to put it down there. I'm going to set it on the table as a given that every deliverables team member has to be highly responsive, mainly to two groups of individuals, ideal clients and other members of our team. So I think they should be highly responsive to everyone, but I recognize that our constituency are these two groups. We've got to be highly responsive to ideal clients, and I'm just going to put it out there that every subject matter expert, every deliverables team member needs to be highly responsive to the other members of the team. And I believe that the standard should be as follows: that you get every member of your team to agree to this statement. I agree, as a rule, to respond within 2 hours whenever possible and within one business day without fail. In other words, worst case scenario, no member of our team or no ideal client is ever going to hear back from me longer than one business day from the time that they reach out to me. So I'm going to say responsiveness is the number one and the most easy way to measure team effectiveness and to increase standards. I can tell you that if it's a problem currently on your team, you setting this standard will be a godsend to the others on the team. The people that are actually, if this is a problem, they'll be thankful that you're addressing this. And I would make this a litmus test. If a member of your team, as great as they are, they could be the most highly skilled subject matter expert in the world, but if they're not going to respond to other members of the team quickly, then what good are they? We don't need them on the team if they're not going to be responsive to the others on the team. I mean, the real key to the team is getting members onto the team that are highly skilled and then making sure that they collaborate with each other. That's what we're talking about today. How do we increase effectiveness? And I'm saying that you increase effectiveness in part by getting your team to collaborate with each other, and they will not collaborate with each other if there are members of the team that are not responsive. Okay. Another high standard that I'm gonna ask you to document is to implement what we were talking about a moment ago. This standard that is kind of foreign to most subject matter experts, that they're not used to having to share their thoughts and share their work with others on the team, but now they're on a team and they have to do it. Everybody on the team has to know the mindset, the thought process behind every recommendation as a team. You have to know what each other are thinking. And the easiest way to do that, at least at the beginning, and to just create a standard around this, is to get each subject matter expert to recognize that you require a document. I would say a file. So like if we're looking in a computer, you know, like a file, meaning, you know, a document, maybe a word processing document like a memo or an Excel spreadsheet or a PDF or some kind of a document or a file has to be submitted by every subject matter expert for each deliverables checkpoint that's assigned, including all backup work and all source documents, literally everything, a memorandum perhaps that explains how they came to how they arrived at their decision. But get your subject matter experts to agree to your requirement that they submit a document for every deliverables checkpoint assigned. Now, if you're unclear on what a deliverables checkpoint is, you'll need to go back through our sessions and listen to past monthly sessions. Deliverables checkpoints are simply all those deliverables. It's the checklist of everything that each of your subject matter experts going to be doing routinely over an annual basis for each and every ideal client. So each of your subject matter experts has a long checklist of things that they're going to do for every ideal client routinely every year. And we call those deliverables checkpoints. So it's up in previous sessions and in monthly projects that we submit, we create for you to work on. We cover this in detail. Deliverables checkpoints, it's up to you to insist that your subject matter experts have deliverables checkpoints assigned to them so that you know you've got your list of deliverables checkpoints, a list of what every single subject matter expert's going to be doing each and every year. The point is, when a deliverables checkpoint is committed to, assigned, and agreed to by a subject matter expert, then you get your subject matter expert to agree to your requirement to submit a document, a file for each and every deliverables checkpoint, because you want to see all their work. You want to see not only the recommendation, you want to see the backup behind the recommendation, the source documents and everything that went into making the recommendation. It needs to be available for everybody else on the team to be able to look at whatever was submitted and say, okay, so here's the recommendation and here's all the backup work that makes it crystal clear to me as an outsider reading this, how they came to this recommendation or this conclusion. So the mindset needs to be, from each subject matter expert, I need to submit everything so that the others on the team can understand the work that I've done behind the scenes and the thought process backing up each analysis and recommendation that I've made. So require a document for every deliverables checkpoint assigned. The third standard that I'm going to recommend is something called the interaction log. So I think we can all agree that that the real power of a team, you know, it's great that you have this team. You've got this team of five subject matter experts. You've got all the professional areas of finance filled with a professional expert. So that's great. So you've got something that most advisors don't have for their clients, and that is a team. And my point is, it's great that you have a team, but it's not complete. Just having a team is not enough. The team is worth, by orders of magnitude, more value to the client if they collaborate. So I would say that step one is to build the team, and step two is to work with the team, because they're not used to being team players, to work with the team to make sure that the expectation is that they have to collaborate with each other. It's not enough. They can't work on their own. You know, they can't sit in their basement on a computer and do their work for each client and not interact with the rest of the team. No, the expectation is that every subject matter expert is going to collaborate with the other members of the team in between client progress meetings. And so the interaction log is nothing more than a format that we recommend for the taking of notes from these interactions. So let's say two subject matter experts collaborate with each other. They agree to the standard. They agree to collaborate with others on the team. So for each and every ideal client, in between client meetings, as they think about issues for that client, as they're thinking through issues, they agree to either pick up the phone or send an email. Somehow they're agreeing to collaborate with other members of the team in between meetings. And I think we can all agree that if they collaborate, let's say they have a phone call, there ought to be notes from that meeting. In other words, what's the point or what's the value to the rest of the team if they have an interaction and nobody documents it? It's kind of like the old cliche, if a tree falls in a forest and no one's around to hear it, does it make a sound? And I think that's the issue here. If you have two subject matter experts collaborating, they don't take notes and they don't tell anybody else on the team that they spoke, you know, did they actually interact or did they interact in a way that's really beneficial to the client and to the team? So I'm saying that you set the standard that, number one, every subject matter expert agrees to collaborate in between client progress meetings with other subject matter experts, and they agree to take notes in the format that we require is a note-taking format called the interaction log. It's simply a format for taking notes that allows others on the team a standard format for note-taking so they can quickly absorb and process the meat of the interaction. And by interacting it, then your administrative manager commits to the team that they will make those interaction logs available to the rest of the team within 24 hours. They will post the interaction log for all subject matter experts to see. So now you have created a standard that's almost unheard of in our industry. You have a team, your team collaborates. Whenever your team collaborates, there are notes from the interaction called the interaction log, and those notes are delivered to every other member of the team who agrees to read them. So now you've got a team that's collaborating, and every member of the team gets to see every collaboration because there may be crossover issues. There may be other issues that are raised when one issue is being discussed. So it allows others on the team to weigh in. So the interaction log. And then I'm gonna introduce something, and we've talked about this in past sessions before. We even have a project that at some point along the line you'll receive called Conducting a Dry Run Prep Meeting. So the Dry Run Prep Meeting is a meeting. It's in essence a dress rehearsal. We're going to delve into it here in a minute in much more detail. But the high level is it's a dress rehearsal of for 7 to 10 days before every client progress meeting. So it's an internal meeting. Every subject matter expert at the meeting is required to review the work of the others before the subject matter expert, and every subject matter expert is required to contribute. So I'm going to cover the mechanics of a dry run prep meeting here in just a minute, but we're talking about what are the standards. So let's say you conduct dry run prep meetings routinely, 7 to 10 days before every client progress meeting. What are the standards? The standards are every subject matter expert needs to agree to review the work of the other subject matter experts before the dry run prep meeting. So they come in basically very prepared, not only prepared with their own work, but they've now reviewed the work of the others and they're prepared to discuss. And then the second standard is that you require every subject matter expert to actually contribute at every dry run prep meeting. So we'll cover this in a minute, but I want, as we're talking about setting high standards and actually documenting these high standards, and I'm just proposing these because, you know, there's so many more high standards that you could set, and I encourage you to do that. You know, these are the biggies. These are the ones that came to mind as I went through all of our standards. These were the ones that if you can implement these, I think these standards we just covered, represent the highest probability of actually doing what you're asking. How do you inspire your subject matter experts to step up their game and deliver more impressive service to clients? These are the standards, the ones that we just covered, that I think get you rolling very quickly on that goal. All right. But realize this, you can set high standards, but the reality is the real standards for your business are actually the ones that you're willing to accept. In other words, if you set high standards and then you turn around and allow standards lower than the ones that you've actually documented and set, then those lower standards actually become your standards. In other words, it's what you're willing to accept. It's not what you document. It's what you're willing to actually accept from your team in terms of the quality of their work. So what I'm making a point here is enforcement, that if you make a decision to implement higher standards like we're talking about today, in parallel with that, you need to make a commitment to enforce the standards, because if you allow standards lower than the ones you set, those become your standards because you've proven that there are no consequences for a team member producing lower standards. In other words, work that's not meeting the standards. And so you need to create consequences. So the question is, you know, how do you create consequences while keeping your team inspired to do, you know, excellent work? Here's my advice about these high standards, and then we'll move on. Never allow lower standards to be submitted without going unnoticed. In other words, always comment. If a member of the team submits something with lower standards, then I recommend that you don't dress them down in front of other people. You know, these are professionals. They were doing well. They're highly successful before you came along. So your goal is not to discipline them in front of others. But that's not to say you shouldn't get with them to make a comment about it later. If a deliverables team member's work standards are lower than the ones that you've set, always get back with them one-on-one and have a conversation about increasing their standards. In other words, at least let them know that you noticed that the standards were not up to the standards that you set. Always get back with them and have a conversation that you noticed that it happened. Let it be known that lower standards are not acceptable, and if nothing else, they'll always be noticed, they'll always be commented upon. Nobody can ever get away on your team with submitting lower standards without getting a call from you one-on-one later. And if you don't make a commitment to enforce the standards, then you'll develop a reputation for having standards that aren't real. Your reputation is going to be the opposite of what you're really intending. Your reputation will actually be for low standards. So if you think that you can document high standards and then just kind of let it slide from time to time, you're wrong. You have to create high standards and then make a commitment to enforce those high standards, or at least comment one-on-one with individuals whenever they submit something that's below the standard. So I want to shift focus and talk about this dry run prep meeting. What is the dry run prep meeting? You know, what's its value? How does it actually weigh into this issue of, you know, getting subject matter experts to step up their game and improve the value that they provide to clients? Okay, so the dry run prep meeting, just to define it, it's a short, very short internal dress rehearsal of the client progress meeting. Your ideal client is not present. The dry run prep meeting is 20 to 30 minutes long. And by the way, if it ends up going longer than 30 minutes, and I'm just giving you an expectation up front, it's very common that your first few dry run prep meetings are longer and sometimes substantially longer than 20 to 30 minutes. I've even heard of dry run prep meetings that run 2 hours long. The point is, if a dry run prep meeting lasts more than 20 or 30 minutes, the issue is almost always a failure of your subject matter experts to prepare. In other words, they come to the meeting and they think the purpose of the meeting is to ask questions and do fact-finding and, you know, quiz other members of the team about the client and their opinions about the client and on and on and on. And that is not the purpose of the dry run prep meeting. All those things need to be done before the dry run prep meeting. If the meeting runs longer than 30 minutes, you'll need to sit down one-on-one and ask your subject matter experts to come to the dry run prep meeting better prepared. Encourage them to get their questions answered in advance of the meeting, to do all that collaboration in between meetings. That's the purpose of, you know, your requirement to have them interact with each other. It's so that they will have these conversations, get them out of the way, come to the dry run prep meeting fully prepared, in essence, to discuss the recommendations that are going to be made for this client at this meeting. At the dry run prep meeting, the trusted advisor does not facilitate this meeting. This is not the meeting that the trusted advisor runs. The trusted advisor is a consumer of the information in this meeting. The trusted advisor shows up and they're just listening. It's the team that is running the dry run prep meeting. Either the administrative manager or one of the subject matter experts facilitates or runs the meeting. And I recommend that you select a facilitator. It's usually either the administrative manager or the financial planning subject matter expert. But it could be just anybody on your team, any subject matter expert or your administrative manager, whoever you've determined is the best leader on your team. So I think some individuals have developed greater leadership skills than others. And it could be, I don't know, your insurance or your tax subject matter expert, whoever on the team you notice that the others respect and take cues from. That means that they are already looking to that individual at some level for leadership. Just ask them to facilitate the meeting. And then, of course, when it comes to covering the agenda for the meeting, each subject matter expert, when it comes to each recommendation, each subject matter expert represents their own recommendations. So whoever facilitates the meeting is kind of handing off the topics and keeping the conversation focused and moving the agenda along so that you finish in 20 or 30 minutes. But it's not the facilitator running the meeting who actually delivers all the information. The purpose of the dry run prep meeting is for each of the individual subject matter experts to share their recommendations and to represent and defend the recommendations that they are making. Now, the trusted advisor's simply an observer. And if they speak up at all, which they usually do, it's to ask questions. And so they're sitting there listening to the team brief them on the recommendations that are being made by the team to the client. That's the purpose of the dry run prep meeting. And the advisor's kind of putting themselves in the client's shoes and asking questions they anticipate the client might ask. So the advisor's trying to understand everything, and the advisor's trying to get it clear in their head what the answers to all the questions are, because the client may come up with those questions. And this is often the first time, this dry run prep meeting is often the very first time the trusted advisor has seen any of this meeting prep. Now, individual subject matter experts actually may have reached out to the trusted advisor for additional information or to brainstorm an issue in between meetings. That's fine. But if not, this is oftentimes the first time the trusted advisor has seen any of this meeting preparation material. So there's not a process before this meeting where the advisor approves everything. That is the purpose of this meeting, and I'll go through the agenda here in a minute. I want to pause just long enough to say that even though the team, the subject matter experts, are briefing the trusted advisor about all the recommendations that they've made, and the advisor is trying to get it, to absorb all this and get it into their head so they can present it to the client, that does not mean that the subject matter expert should not be in the actual client meeting. On a selective basis, if the trusted advisor thinks it benefits the client, the trusted advisor can and should request that subject matter experts be available to attend the meeting with the client to represent their own recommendation. It may be a complex issue, and the client may have a lot of questions, and the advisor may think it'll save a lot of time if we have the subject matter expert there to answer the questions. Or it may be a complex issue where you need the subject matter expert there to actually have a conversation with the client, kind of a back and forth, so that the subject matter expert can ask all the pertinent questions. Either way, I'm not implying that we're protecting the client from the subject matter experts. That's nothing could be further from the truth. You can have the subject matter experts in the client meeting. I encourage you to do that if you think it's of benefit to the client. All I'm saying is the purpose of the dry run prep meeting is for the trusted advisor to absorb, understand, and approve all the recommendations. And they have to understand each recommendation well enough that they could present it to the client, even if they ask the subject matter expert into the meeting to do that themselves. Okay, so dry run prep meeting. It's an internal meeting. This is just a recap of what we just discussed. It's an internal meeting. The ideal client's not present. It's a short meeting, 20, 30 minutes long. And the trusted advisor does not facilitate the meeting. Either the administrative manager or one of the subject matter experts runs the meeting. So that's the basic backdrop of the dry run prep meeting. That's what it is. Now, let's talk about the objectives. What's the objective? What are you trying to actually accomplish in the dry run prep meeting? What is it that you want to make sure you walk out of each dry run prep meeting having accomplished? Well, you want to make sure that every subject matter expert contributes. You want to, the objective of the meeting is to actually prioritize the greatest probability strategy. We call this the GPS. It's a single listing, step-by-step listing of all the recommendations that each member of your team is making for this client. So we call it the greatest probability strategy step-by-step implementation plan of action. This is simply the list of all the action items that need to occur that are created by your subject matter experts in order for the client to remain on track. Okay, so the goal is to prioritize all these recommendations before you leave the meeting. So you know you don't walk out of the meeting without the recommendations being approved and prioritized. That's an objective. And the third objective is to finalize the client agenda. Okay, so yes, you have all the recommendations. So what's the difference between that list of recommendations and the agenda? Well, the way I explain it is the agenda is the higher level of the meeting. These are what I would call the broad conversations. So the GPS, the greatest probability strategy listing all the recommendations, is just one item on the agenda to review that. There are other items on the agenda. And if you have a question about the agenda, we definitely have a document that covers that. You can submit a question for future monthly sessions, and I'll cover that in a future session if you have questions about that. But it's to finalize the client agenda, and more to the point, to the question on today's agenda, how do we get the team to step up their game, the subject matter experts? The purpose of the dry run prep meeting is to establish the highest priority conversation, and these are proposed by the subject matter experts. Now, it's for this one right here that I'm actually selecting the dry run prep meeting to talk about, because I think if you can get this highest priority conversation concept well understood by your subject matter experts, this concept in and of itself will increase value to clients and will begin the process of adding value to you, what your clients perceive as what you're doing for them, services you're providing to them. So let's go through what I call the four-point agenda. So this dry run prep meeting is supposed to last 20 to 30 minutes. Let me walk through it so you can see kind of how this meeting flows. And then we'll wrap up. Okay, so on the agenda for the dry run prep meeting, so as your team is running this meeting for you as a trusted advisor, it starts off with a progress report. That's about 3 minutes long. Then there's a status report on each goal. It's not a conversation. It's just a status report from your financial planner. It's 1 minute. So now we're just 4 minutes into the meeting. Then you approve the GPS recommendations. You approve each and every recommendation from each and every subject matter expert that has a recommendation for the client. And you manage the time. And on average, this should take about 8 minutes if your subject matter experts are focused and they come prepared. And then you have the highest priority conversation. You establish what the highest priority conversation needs to be for this meeting with this client. That discussion also is about 8 minutes. So there's your 20 minutes right there. If your team is focused, if they come prepared to ask the right questions and to do their peer review and so forth, then this meeting will be 20 minutes long. Let me dissect it in a little bit more detail so you understand each of the components of this meeting. What is the progress report and why is it just 3 minutes? Well, it's really just a report on three numbers: cash reserves, growth assets defined in our world as the total amount of assets that have been earmarked for funding future goals. So a discussion, a report on the current total amount of what we call growth assets, that is the assets to fund future goals, and the total number of debt. So it's a reporting on these three values. What drove the differences since the last meeting? So each of these numbers, cash reserves, growth assets, and debt, they had a certain value at the previous meeting that you had with this client. They're now a different number. They're either higher or lower. And there can only be two things that drove the difference: either the client added or withdrew money, or the markets increased or decreased in value. So there's a quick report on each of these three numbers as to what drove the difference in that number, each of these three numbers, since the last meeting. And then the question becomes, and this is again goes to the discipline of, you know, what do you do to get your subject matter experts to step up their game? This is often something that is not frequently done by professionals routinely, but this should be covered in every dry run prep meeting. And it is, you know, we've just reported on the current values for each of these three numbers: cash, reserves, growth, and debt, growth assets and debt. We've talked about what drove the differences, whether the client added or withdrew money, or whether the markets went up or down. There was some reason that the numbers are different at this meeting than at the last meeting. That's been discussed briefly. It's not discussed, it's a report. So this is typically your financial planner just reporting on this. And then the third issue, which is something that may be new to your financial planner, is the number on track or off track? In other words, is the number where it should be at this point in the client's plan? So whether your financial planner is used to doing this or not, I recommend it's on the agenda. Your financial planner needs to put a stake in the ground and say to the rest of the team very quickly whether each of these numbers are on or off track to what they should be. Okay, so that's up to your financial planner to determine. But those are the three bullet points in the progress report, and it's up to you to convey to your financial planner. This is typically the financial planner with the growth assets. It may be the money management subject matter expert, but whoever delivers components of this progress report, it's important that you hold them accountable to keeping this report to 3 minutes. We're not here to discuss or delve into anything. It's just to create context at the beginning of the meeting so that everybody on the team is on the same page and they understand the basic numbers of this client and whether things, what happened since the last meeting to drive the differences, and whether the numbers are on track or off track. It's just to give context. Then there's a status of each goal. Again, this is for sure the financial planner. I'm talking 1 minute. Go through each of the client goals one by one, and it's a simple, you know, going goal by goal and saying this goal is on track, or if it's off track, maybe it's fully funded, maybe it's on hold, whatever the status of each goal is. I want your financial planner in this meeting at the beginning of the meeting to go through each client goal and let the rest of the team know whether each goal is on track or off track. So that's 1 minute. Now we're 4 minutes into the meeting. Now you start going through each recommendation that the subject matter experts are proposing for this client. So you pause on each recommendation, you let the individual subject matter expert who wrote the recommendation represent their recommendation, so they defend it. And it's the role of the others on the team to play client advocate or devil's advocate or whatever you want to call it. It's up to everybody else on the team to collegially challenge the recommendation. In other words, press the subject matter expert, you know, did you think about this? Did you take that into account? Why are you doing it this way instead of some other way? It's up to the other subject matter experts to participate and to provide peer review, questions, to help the trusted advisor by peppering the subject matter expert who came up with the recommendation with questions about how they came up with it. And then at the end of this, all the recommendations, once they're approved by the trusted advisor, to then prioritize them. So they should show up, each recommendation, on the GPS in priority order. And then finally, the highest priority conversation is established. Okay, so what is the highest priority conversation? I don't want to go into too much detail because this highest priority conversation process, if you were a member of the Trusted Advisor Toolkit, we would have your subject matter experts beginning to propose the highest priority conversation that needs to happen in this meeting with this client. We would have this process begin 60 days, 2 months before the client meeting. It is for each subject matter expert, it's their responsibility to propose what they believe is the highest priority conversation. Now, it may be something in their narrow field of finance, or knowing the client as well as they do, they may be looking at all the other interactions of the other subject matter experts. They could be looking at the context of all the work that's been done by everybody else, and they may suggest that the highest priority conversation that the advisor has is in some other area of finance than theirs. But the point is, if the trusted advisor just had time for one significant conversation with the client, the highest priority conversation is each subject matter expert's individual opinion about what they think that highest priority conversation should be at this meeting. So each subject matter expert proposes what they think the highest priority conversation should be. Now, keep in mind, you've just reviewed all the recommendations and put them in order. So you've got the context in the team's mind very clearly at this point. But you go through and you allow each subject matter expert to say, here's what I think is the highest priority conversation. If the trusted advisor just had one conversation, it should be this one. And they each propose what it should be. And then between them, the subject matter experts discuss and select from among the list, they propose the single highest priority conversation. So it's not a process where the trusted advisor is really asked to participate. It's a conversation among the subject matter experts, which the trusted advisor just is allowed to hear and to experience, so that it's really the trusted advisor's final decision over the next week. So the meeting with the actual client is a week from now. But this gives the advisor a lot of stimulative thought between now and the actual meeting. It gives them a week to think about what the subject matter experts have proposed. And so the advisor just simply gets the benefit of hearing this conversation and receiving from the team their skilled opinion about what they feel that the highest priority conversation should be between the advisor and the client. And then it's up to the advisor to invest the next week to really decide if that's what they want to, if that's the direction they want to go or not. I think it's incumbent upon the trusted advisor to come up with a final decision as to what they actually feel should be the highest priority conversation. All we're trying to do in the dry run prep meeting is to stimulate thought and to give the trusted advisor the benefit of the, you know, the opinions of the team. And that's it. So I've shared with you some strategies on creating higher standards. One of those higher standards is to really conduct and create a discipline around the dry run prep meeting, which is nothing more than a false deadline before the actual client meeting creates a false deadline for all the meeting preparation work and all the work from your team to be submitted early, so nothing's left to chance and wait till the last minute. So the dry run prep meeting creates a false deadline where you have your team create everything a week in advance, and you sit down as a team, and in a brief abbreviated meeting, you just go over all the meeting material. And that is just a benefit to the trusted advisor to have all this to think about quietly for a week before the actual meeting. But what are we actually talking about? I've talked about mechanics. We've talked about actual tactics of what you can do to increase standards and to conduct a dry run prep meeting that actually increases, you know, requires your subject matter expert to step up their game. But I think I want to wrap up today's session by saying what you're really doing here is creating a shift in your team culture. And that's what you're really doing. What you're attempting to do is create a paradigm shift in the minds of each and every one of your subject matter experts. So rather than having your subject matter experts think something like, what services can we afford to provide our clients? In other words, professionals can, if they don't, if your leadership doesn't get involved in helping change their thinking, it's just natural business thinking for a professional to think, not so much in terms of what's the most we could do for this client, but it's more like, here's what I've agreed to be paid for these services. So, you know, the natural tendency is for a professional to think, what services can we actually afford to provide to the clients given the fees that we're getting, okay? And as a leadership exercise, what I'm telling you that you need to do is to create a team culture shift so that instead of thinking that way, which is natural, or even worse, having them think, you know, what's the least we can do to justify our fee, you know, that's even worse. It's your job as leader to have each subject matter expert think, what will it take for each subject matter expert to begin thinking, what can I do individually? In other words, personal accountability. What can I individually do to increase this client's opinion about the value of what we do for them? In other words, what can I do as an individual subject matter expert so that this client will view us as indispensable, not limited by the fees that we're getting, because we can always increase the fees if we have to, but I don't want to open that can of worms. It's more of an intellectual exercise. It's can you inspire your subject matter expert to even in theory, on the holodeck, to think, you know, hypothetically, what could I be doing or what could we as a team be doing? But I want you to be thinking about what it would take for each subject matter expert to begin taking a little bit of personal accountability so that they're thinking, what can I do so that this client will view us as indispensable, not necessarily because of the rest of the team and what they're doing, but because of what I personally am doing. Imagine if you had five subject matter experts who each approach the problem this way. They each approach the issue as thinking, it's my responsibility for this client to view us as indispensable. So now you have five subject matter experts who have really brainstormed and thought it through creatively because they're skilled. They've thought through creatively, what would it take if this client viewed us as indispensable because of something that I'm doing? And now you have five subject matter experts, each of whom the client views as indispensable somehow because of what the result of what work they're doing. And now you have created just an extraordinary client experience. So what can you do to get each and every subject matter expert to think individually, what can they be doing until referrals increase? What more can I be doing for each ideal client? So rather than, you know, getting a team, you know, I can't tell you how many times I talk to an advisor and they are telling me things like, my subject matter experts are pushing back on increasing the level of service because they're making a case to me that that our clients are already getting more than they're paying for. That's not the question. Until we see referrals increase, and referrals are the measure, you know, until your clients, let's put it this way, clients are not going to introduce you to people that they care about for you to do business with them if they don't think your team is indispensable or highly valuable or impressive enough to mention. So the ultimate measure, and you need to share this with your subject matter experts, that, it, you know, if our team's so good, then our referrals will increase because our clients are the ones that have to make the decision. It's our clients in their mind who have to consider us indispensable. It doesn't matter what your subject matter experts think is worth the fee that the clients are paying. It's irrelevant. Until referrals increase, the question should be, what more can I be doing individually for each client until referrals increase? And then to have that conversation and to get your entire team thinking more in this direction, that's what we're really talking about today. And at the end of the day, what we're describing here is a leadership challenge on your shoulders as the trusted advisor to get your team to have this paradigm shift and begin thinking about not whether the services currently provided are worth what the client's paying. No, it's for to get them to thinking, what more can we be doing for these clients until we start seeing some evidence of life from the clients that they are impressed, and that evidence is always going to show up in increased referrals. Well, that's it for this monthly session of the Advisor Pack monthly session. As always, we wish you the best in implementing. And until next month, I'm Mark Little.